He's winning. I mean, every single poll you look at, ladies and gentlemen, Donald Trump is winning. There's only one outlier, and I don't really trust it. I'm brand new one out just moments ago. I'm going to tell you all about it. And you know what? It's just not that hard. Look, it's the economy, stupid. We know who coined that phrase. Ladies and gentlemen, Donald Trump right now looking to be the poised winner in 2024, unless the Democrats are able to pull off something like this. You know, they could. They would. And maybe they have. So I'll leave it at that. Welcome to the program, everyone. So good to have you here. You know, coming up today, we are going to have Laura Loomer. She was one of the first to break that story about the judge in New York covering the hush money case. You know her, right? Independent journalist. The president, former president, 45, knows her. Here's what he said about Laura Loomer just last night at a Kerry Lake fundraiser.
Watch. A lot of great people, Laura. How are you? You look so beautiful, as always. That's a woman with courage. You don't want to be Loomered. If you're Loomered, you're in deep trouble. That's the end of your career, in a sense. Thanks, Laura.
All right. Well, she is here. We're going to talk to Laura herself about Loomering this Judge Merchan there in New York. Okay. And we got to talk about Bob Iger. We got to talk about Disney. My colleague, my co-founder at 76 Research, Rob Horton, he's going to be here live today to walk you through just exactly what went down. I mean, it was like a political campaign. This wokeness, though, I'll tell you, it's got to stop. It's a virus that's infecting so many companies. It's got to end somehow, some way. Rob and I are on a mission. You'll hear from him directly coming up. And of course, we got to talk about the gaslighting. I mean, I'm tired of it. This gaslighting is really scary. They're trying to make you think one thing when it's really another. I mean, it's just been going on and on. And this is why. This is why nobody trusts the mainstream media anymore. But we begin. We begin today with polls out just hours ago. This one from Emerson College showing yet again Donald Trump on top. Take a peek. April 2024 national poll. Trump 46. Biden 45. And you know what I think about that. You know, I think the number is actually far higher for Donald Trump because nobody actually wants to tell the pollster, yep, I'm going to vote for Donald Trump. But they do say things like, you know what? The economy really stinks. The economy is not good. And they do say, I'm concerned about the border. And that's when you start to see that 20 or 30 point spread. So if people are overwhelmingly concerned about these issues, and indeed they are, then you really think they're going to vote for Biden? You look at his approval ratings, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, there was a terrific clip. CNN went through this one, and the numbers are just stunning. They are really stunning because what you actually find is that compare and contrast to Donald Trump at this point in the election cycle, you know what? I'm telling you, Biden is way behind. He does not have the approval rating that even Trump had. I mean, it was like neck and neck at this point before. I don't think any president outside of Carter, I mean, this is Carter 2.0, has had approval ratings like this one right now. So none of these polls should surprise you. I think people are longing for what used to be. Let's take a look. If we look at the Emerson poll, you know, it's been kind of a crisscross, zigzag. And in this hypothetical 2024 ballot test they have, if you look at that, you know, at various times you saw Trump way ahead and then it started to narrow and now he's climbing back up again. I mean, look, it's tight. It's tight. But my point is it really shouldn't be. One of the reasons it may be a little bit tight is because of that State of the Union address just the other night. Yeah, the State of the Union, he did okay on. I mean, I think we're all wondering how, because he can't walk up or down a flight of stairs. He gets lost in his train of thought when he's talking to reporters. This president is struggling, and yet he performed okay at the State of the Union. I mean, thank goodness he did. I mean, we didn't want to be embarrassed on the national stage any more than we already have, right? I mean, if he fell or something, that would be kind of bad, kind of like when he fell at the Air Force Academy. Well, we've all wondered about it. And now the former president of the United States, Donald Trump, he's been wondering about it so much that he went on Hugh Hewitt's show today and he said something pretty darn startling. And he said, look, if I'm going to do a debate with this guy, we got to get one thing straight. I'll let him take it away. Watch.
You've said you'll debate him anywhere, anytime. Do you think he'll agree to any debate?
Anywhere, anytime.
Do you think he'll agree?
I don't think so, but I hope he does.
Do you think
what happened is, you know, that white stuff that they happened to find, which happened to be cocaine in the White House? I don't know. I think something's going on there. Because I watched his State of the Union, and he was all jacked up at the beginning. By the end, he was fading fast. There's something going on there. I want a debate, and I think debates with him, at least, should be drug tested. I want
Mr. President, are you suggesting President Biden's using cocaine?
I don't know what he's using, but that was not. Hey, he was higher than a kite. And by the way, it was the worst address I've ever seen. State of the Nation. I'll tell you, State of the Union, that's not State of the Union, because he doesn't represent us properly, that I can tell you. But he's obviously being helped some way, because most of the time he looks like he's falling asleep, and all of a sudden he walked up there and did a poor job, but he was all jacked up.
Right? On what? Right? That's an interesting thing to say. It's quite an accusation. And yet when you consider the fact that this guy can't seem to actually get through an interview or get through a speech or even figure out where he is on stage and yet managed to pull through the State of the Union. Wow. I mean, are we ever going to have a debate? I don't think that Biden would ever submit to these tests. Maybe for good reason. He's never going to submit to these tests, right? So that's not going to happen. So then I guess we don't get a debate. Is that good or bad? I mean, I think it's bad for the American people, because I think the American people do need to have this policy stuff focused on front and center. So it's not good from that standpoint. I do think it could be fine from Donald Trump's standpoint. The only reason being, when I saw him debate Biden last time around, my only concern for Trump was that he was too good, right? That he was too strong. He was too with it. And he attacked Biden over and over and over again, which made some people in America feel kind of sympathetic. And Biden's like, hey, I'm just a nice guy. I'm just your, you know, grandfather or your uncle or, you know, the guy who's in the institution for Alzheimer's. I don't know. Go with whatever you want. But he seems almost helpless compared to Donald Trump. And I know that when Donald Trump was up against Hillary Clinton and those debates were coming, you know, he was actually very careful. And some of the people around him were like, hey, you know, be super careful because she's a woman. She's a mother. She's a grandmother. Don't go so much for the jugular. I mean, he did, but he did it kind of in a charming way. And then I think when he came to debating Joe Biden, it was like the gloves are off. You know, I don't have to be chivalrous with you in any way, shape, or form. You're just another guy. And he like went in. And so my only sort of preference would be, if he were to debate Joe Biden, that he do so in a charming, sort of funny, self-deprecating. I mean, he's so good at this. He's so good at this. And then come in with the zingers, one after another. Boom, boom, boom. But if he's not able to debate him, maybe that's okay too. I think that the most important thing is that we do focus on policy and then we hone in on this policy. By the way, we don't even have to, right? Like, because America gets it. America gets it. The economy's not good. The border's not good. Everything that's going on in this country, not good. And that's why Joe Biden's approval ratings are so low. And that's why Emerson College joins with the Wall Street Journal in telling us the same exact story. The Wall Street Journal, in their poll, showed us that in all of these swing states, 6 out of 7, Trump was leading by a pretty large margin. I mean, it was like a funeral service over on MSNBC as they got this information and they tried to gaslight you into thinking that somehow maybe it's not true. Look at this. When they take a look at the issues, listen to the woman reporter here. Let's Joe and Mika.
Trump neck and neck in every swing state. According to the new numbers from the Wall Street Journal, Trump leads Biden in Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, North Carolina, Nevada, and Pennsylvania by figures that are all within the poll's margin of error. In Wisconsin, the survey shows the two candidates tied at 46% each. The poll also finds negative perceptions about the economy remain a problem for Biden. 63% of swing state voters say the U.S. economy overall is not so good or poor condition, while 36% say it's in excellent or good condition. But when asked to rate the economic conditions in their own states, the majority of voters in five of those seven swing states say it's in excellent or good shape. Joining us now, CEO.
Okay, very interesting. Were they? This is very interesting. How she's trying to say, in other words, when it's on an individual level, you guys don't know what you're talking about because you're doing great, right? So why do you complain about it nationally? I mean, it's just like the Wall Street Journal headline that we got in this morning's paper. Can we see that one? Because they said, "What's wrong with the economy? It's you, not the data." Many Americans believe that the economy and their finances are worse than they really are. Are you kidding me? Greg Ipp, shame on you, buddy. You know what? You used to be a decent Fed reporter. I like Greg, but he is so wrong on this. He is so wrong because when you look at numbers, the actual data, the actual numbers, and you look at inflation and you compare it with wages, guess what you find? Inflation's up better than 18% since Joe Biden came to office. Wages, they have grown only 15% and change, adjusted for inflation. So you get that spread difference right there. That's why people feel bad. And then when you think about the cost of everything, okay, sure, you know, maybe you can buy some cheap clothes from China, but your mortgage payment's way up. It's 66% higher on average. Rents are better than 20% higher on average. And take a look at this headline, ladies and gentlemen. You're paying more at the gas pumps. You know it. I know it. AAA knows it. The Wall Street Journal doesn't care. They want you to think somehow it's all in your head. The economy's fine. Don't worry about it. Nationwide average price for regular gas topped $3.54 a gallon, a spike of more than 45%. Under President Biden. Gee, thanks, Biden. There is a song from the 1970-something musical Annie. Great musical. Little girls everywhere love this one. And there's a song called "We'd Like to Thank You, Herbert Hoover." Well, we'd like to thank you, Joe Biden, for that massive uptick in gas prices, $3.54 a gallon. I'm sorry, but this is exactly 1,000% why Americans are frustrated with the economy and fearful about inflation. And over and over and over again, another YouGov poll just out, a survey saying Americans care passionately about inflation and the economy. They're worried about this stuff, and rightly so. So no matter what they're trying to tell us on MSNBC, no matter what they're trying to tell you in the Wall Street Journal even, you know the truth. I know the truth. AAA knows the truth. There you go. Look, the reality is you got to think about inflation. You got to protect your investments. It's part of the reason why I started 76 Research, ladies and gentlemen, right? I mean, Rob and I started this and I'm like, okay, priority number one, actually there were two priorities. I basically wanted to make sure that anybody who's saving for the future would have an income in the future, right? So we have like an income builder portfolio, and then we have a dividend portfolio. We have an inflation protected portfolio. Part of the dividend stocks actually go into the income builder portfolio so that you have an income that's also going to suffice in inflationary times. And so, you know, I know a lot of people say, oh, okay, you know, like, let me put my money in a bond or something. But over time, what do we find over and over again? The S&P 500 outpaces the gains that you would get in a traditional bond vehicle. So you'd have to have really, really high interest rates, like, you know, 17%, going back to quite literally the Carter days, in order for some of that to make sense. And so in there, you're going to find at 76research.com an income builder portfolio. You'll also see an inflation protection portfolio where the goal is to just keep protecting you from. Then there's growth stuff in there too, but check it out. And he's going to be on in a little bit. So we'll get to that in a second. But before we do, did you see the president the other night in Michigan? He came out swinging as he normally does. By the way, the police giving him thumbs up there. The police union, this is just fantastic. giving him a big endorsement. Wow. I mean, the guy with 91 indictments against him getting an endorsement from the largest police union in the country. Think about the significance of that. Well, he got up there and he started complaining and ranting about the barbarians that are such brutal murderers in this country. And of course, it got completely taken out of context, as these things always do. But how would you not call anybody that would harm another human being like that anything other than an animal or a barbarian? I mean, we're human beings. And these human beings are destroying life. And somehow they deserve more protection than the lives they're destroying? I don't think so. Well, Donald Trump knows that. Let's listen.
The 22-year-old nursing student in Georgia who was barbarically murdered by an illegal alien animal. The Democrats say, please don't call them animals. They're humans. I said, no, they're not humans. They're not humans. They're animals. And Nancy Pelosi told me that. She said, please don't use the word animal, sir, when you're talking about these people. I said, I'll use the word animal because that's what they are. I'll never forget my vow to her.
So Nancy doesn't want him talking like that. She said, don't say that about them. And he's like, but, you know, when you murder somebody, what else do we call you, right? And so they extrapolate what they want to extrapolate. And what do you know? The next thing, you have them saying that he's calling all immigrants this. And he's not. And yet that's what they're going to portray. I mean, it's one of the reasons why he's like, well, let me lean into this one because, you know, I talk about the auto sector and I say it's going to be a bloodbath. And the next thing you know, they're talking about me saying the election's a bloodbath. He's like, you know what? Biden's got a bloodbath on his hands in terms of the violence, the immigration, et cetera. So then he created Biden'sbloodbath.com where he's raising more money. So he's got this ability, if you would, to kind of take their words and use it against them. And he does so quite artfully and quite successfully. And yet they're so dumb. They just keep doubling down on the wrong stuff. I mean, Joy Reid, great example of it here on MSNBC.
But we begin tonight with Donald Trump's ongoing normalization of racism and violence. 9 years after America's highest profile birther began his first presidential campaign by describing Mexican migrants as rapists and criminals, you can no longer be surprised at the pure venom Donald Trump is capable of spewing about people of color. Even though more often than not, he's referring to people who are fleeing poverty and violence and who are simply looking for the prospect of a better life through hard, often back-breaking work here in the United States. But compassion is not in the vocabulary of the man who paints himself as the second coming of Jesus while ignoring Jesus' own exhortation to welcome the stranger and the immigrant. And in a pair of campaign appearances on Tuesday in Michigan and Wisconsin.
I'm going to jump in right there. So she says he has absolutely no compassion. I'm sorry. Compassion for who, Joy? Are we supposed to feel bad for the immigrant who comes here and murders an American citizen? Like that young student in Georgia? I'm sorry. You know what? We're all good people, pretty altruistic. I have a lot of good things to say about Americans, but it's not up to us to mourn the atrocities that these people are. And when I say these people, I'm specifically referring to the criminals, okay? Just like he was. I'm sick of words getting taken out of my mouth. He's sick of words getting taken out of his mouth. You're probably sick of words getting taken out of your mouth. They want to tell you you are bad. MAGA is bad. Well, MAGA now has the representative, top of the ticket for the GOP, running for president. So you're going to tell me half the country's bad? Haven't we been through this already? Guys, didn't Jamie Dimon, CEO of JP Morgan Chase, actually tell you at Davos, because that's where y'all go, that it's getting old? Like, we can't just keep saying, like, half the country's bad. No. You are utterly irresponsible to allow so many people into this country completely unchecked. You don't know who's coming in. Don't we have any Homeland Security doing anything? I mean, I realize they busted Diddy's. We've been all over that story. But there's more that they need to do. and we need a better system. And don't sit there and tell me it's the Republicans. How many times have I played you the sound? Remember, Joe Biden in 2020 with his debate, you know, the debate that Kamala tore him up one side and down the other about the busing thing. It was in that debate that Joe Biden sat there with a straight face and said he wanted to welcome everyone to this country and that he would encourage migrants to, quote, storm the border. He said he encouraged it. I would encourage them to storm the border. Direct quote, storm the border. Well, they took him at his word, quite literally. They did. And now we're suffering the aftershock and the effects of all that right here in real time. And somehow we're the bad ones for not wanting to take in more. I mean, these people are really and truly off their rockers. I mean, easy for them to say, you know what? You know, Joy's got her private car to go in and out of the studio with. Nancy Pelosi has her giant gate. You know, but forget about it. You know, you can't actually have police in your neighborhood. That's what defund the police was about. And now you get a situation in New York City where they're trying to get the National Guard to ride the subway with you because it's become so violent. And instead of focusing on things like violence, the border, the economy, inflation, what do? They're so focused on all this legal mumbo jumbo. You got the judge down in Fulton County, ladies and gentlemen, the Superior Court Judge Scott McAfee, did I say that right? McAfee, you know, he's the guy who was too weak to do anything about Fannie Willis, even though she was clearly doing some funny stuff, possibly spending some of her boyfriend's money, thereby financially gaining from the job that she landed him at some $600,000 because he was billing such astronomical amounts. Well, yeah, that judge. That judge is like, oh, you know what? We're going to have to move forward. We're not going to hold this case, even though he had filed to have it dismissed there in Georgia under his First Amendment rights. He's like, nope, 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 nope. We're going to keep moving forward. And he says he's got him on a technicality. He's basically saying that the way the challenge was brought, it actually limited the arguments that could be made. It's kind of like what he said when he was talking about Fannie, who used to work for him. And he's like, well, you know, maybe, but you weren't able to really prove out that she did, in fact, financially benefit. Apparently, the cruise didn't count. So he wants to have his cake and eat it, too, down there in Georgia. And so they're moving forward with this. Well, they're not only moving forward, they're in Georgia, apparently, but we get something going on. It just starts in a matter of days in New York, and that would be the hush money case, the Stormy Daniels stuff. Mm-hmm. My concern in this case, the lack of ethics of the judge, because he feels, in my estimation anyway, to be kind of ethically challenged in that his daughter makes her money from a big Democratic consulting organization that works with the likes of Kamala Harris and Adam Schiff. So she's getting paychecks from these guys. They're raising money off of the Stormy Daniels case, and yet somehow her dad's presiding over this thing. I mean, again, like, come on, people. Like, even just the appearance of this impropriety, it's significant. It's a big deal. It's wrong, okay? It's wrong. She's fine to do whatever she wants to do. You know what? It's a free world. You can go out and make your own money, kid. We applaud you for doing that. But this is one where her dad could have said, should have said, you know what, I'm going to recuse myself because it hits a little too close to home. And instead of doing that, he issues a gag order on Donald Trump saying, you can't talk about my daughter, you can't talk about me, and he's moving forward. So once again, America's left questioning, is he going to get a free trial? You know, one of the first people to bring up some of these issues was Laura Loomer down in Florida. The president saw her in a crowd last night, and he had a nice little shout-out. Take a listen.
We have a lot of great friends and a lot of great people. Laura, how are you? You look so beautiful, as always. That's a woman with courage. You don't want to be loomered. If you're loomered, you're in deep trouble. That's the end of your career, in a sense. Thanks, Laura.
Well, this judge, Merchan Merchan, he was lumored by none other than Laura. And I sat down with her a short time ago to talk about the case. Take a listen to this. Or Loomer, who has been trailblazing all over this story, and she's getting a few retruths, as they say, with the former president sending out some of the things that she has unearthed. Laura, welcome. Host, I should point out, on YouTube of Loomer Unleashed. Let's sort of start at what strikes you as just a little bit odd, and me just a little bit odd. You got the daughter of the judge that's going to decide the former president's fate, who has a very clear political bias, but not just a political bias, a financial bias. Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks so much for having me on your program. It's great to be here with you. Look, as you know, the media is corrupt and our judicial system is corrupt, Trish. And unfortunately, you know, we're not really seeing a lot of factual reporting on this issue. We're not even seeing any of the rot within our judicial system, or as I like to call it, our Department of Injustice, being exposed to the public, because the judge, Judge Merchan, has now decided to extend and expand a gag order on President Trump. Well, what does this matter to the general public? Well, the reason why the public isn't hearing about information like this, the fact that the judge's daughter, a woman by the name of Lauren Merchan, who's the president of a company called Authentic Campaigns, which happens to be a very large multi-million dollar, I mean, I'm talking hundreds of millions of dollars here, okay, of work that they do every single election season for progressive Democrat candidates, receiving money, millions of dollars of payments into her company from pro-indictment, anti-Trump Democrats, people like Adam Schiff and Chuck Schumer and the Senate Democrat PAC, and a lot of other clients as well, including Kathy Hochul. There's a lot of different financial conflicts of interest.
Okay, so she's in business to you know, push the campaigns of these various people. Hey, look, nothing wrong with that, right? That's a legitimate business. I think the problem I have, I mean, you may choose to say whether you find something wrong with it or not. The problem I have is that her dad is presiding over someone's fate who, I mean, these are like 6 degrees of separation, except it's like only 1, 2, 3 degrees of separation, right? You got Adam Schiff, who's a client, and then the dad is deciding this. And at that point, to me, like, I just say, hey, you know what? Church and state, Chinese wall. She's my daughter. She's totally entitled to do this. But maybe it's time I recuse myself.
Exactly. And that's all we're trying to point out. And that's what the focus of my investigation is that if you're going to be a judge and you're going to be, you know, putting gag orders on President Trump, the question then becomes why, right? Mm-hmm. You generally gag somebody in order to protect something from coming out. Well, what do you not want coming out? Generally, gag orders are issued to, you know, members of the jury, right? So that they're not able to, you know, speak about things to the public, so that they can't go leak their discussions when a trial is ongoing to the press. But now you have the president of the United States being gagged by a judge.
What I want to get at is the ethics violation that I think this is.
Yeah.
Laura, I really think it is. There's an ethics violation at stake here. You cannot, in good conscience, decide this when, even if, let's assume he is the best of the best and he's not going to let how his daughter feels influence him in any way, shape, or form. Ultimately, you know what it comes down to? The way the public perceives it. So if you have half the country sitting there saying, well, that thing was rigged, then what kind of justice do we have? The perception of justice is so important. I mean, almost as important as justice itself. And I think anybody's going to look at this and say, uh-huh, it's rigged. And you know what? He, on an individual, basic American level, should want to make sure that that seed of doubt is not there for anyone.
I agree completely. But unfortunately, the judge has doubled down and has now expanded upon the gag order, making it so that President Trump cannot speak about the judge's family. As if it wasn't correct, right? Why would the judge find the need to put the kibosh on Donald Trump and prevent him from speaking about it?
At first I saw this and I'm like, oh gosh, what is he doing? They're not going after the daughter. And I'm thinking, who is she? Is she a kid? Is she this? Is she that? And I'm like, oh my gosh, she runs a big, giant Democrat consulting firm. And her clients are Kamala Harris and Adam Schiff.
And Joe Biden.
Whoa. Now, this is a story. In other words, I actually think that this judge helped make this a story by putting the gag order on Trump, because even if he'd just been over there on Truth Social doing his thing, would it have gotten picked up everywhere? Not necessarily.
No, but it got picked up after President Trump started posting about my investigative report into Lauren Mershon.
Wow. Well, listen, keep doing all your reporting. Everybody can watch you on Loomer, forgive me.
Unleashed. Loomer Unleashed on Rumble.
You're unleashed, yep. Girl. You're unleashed. I love it. All right. Thank you again for all your time today. We continue watching you on Twitter, on YouTube, elsewhere. Laura Loomer, thank you so much. She is a dynamo, but doing a lot of reporting on this story. And Laura Loomer, thank you for your time. Listen, guys, you know what? They're going to do everything they can possibly conceive of to try to take this from Donald Trump. And they're freaked out and they're frightened. And every poll gives them bad, bad, bad news. I mean, the only there was one, like, so Biden the other day, apparently he just lost it. I mean, there were like F-bombs up the wazoo coming out of his mouth at the White House. He's yelling at everybody about these polls. He doesn't understand like why he's not doing better in Pennsylvania, et cetera. And why the coverage in the media is actually so negative on him. Well, I think sometimes we just have to go with the numbers, right, Joe? And if the numbers show Trump is actually ahead, then that's what we report. I mean, most of the time. And then sometimes you'll get one that's neck and neck. And I noticed suddenly, ever since he got so mad, suddenly you started to see this more positive spin on some of the things. So if it's like 45-45 and he's neck and neck in a particular state, then the media cheers that. They're trying to see that as a win for Biden. Well, here's one that they're really cheering. And, you know, we got to see everything here. I'm a big believer, and I have a lot of doubts about this one. It's a Franklin and Marshall poll. It shows Biden at 48%, Trump at 38% in Pennsylvania. And that actually suggests that things actually could be really more challenging there. I don't necessarily buy that. I really don't. I mean, I call it like it is. I just knew. Like, I knew he was going to win in 2016. I didn't think he would. Really, in 20, I mean, I hate to say that, right? Like, I knew it would be much harder in 2020. But at this moment in time, and this is purely, like, this is just my sixth sense. You know, when I go to the airport and people come up to me and they're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. When I'm around town and I hear, oh, Trish, I listened to your podcast and blah, 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 blah. And then I'm like, oh, you listen to the podcast, you watch the YouTube channel. And there are people that sometimes I wouldn't necessarily think were all in for Donald Trump. Like, I get it. I get it. One of the other things I heard from a friend who listens to this podcast is that he's been taking Balance of Nature for years. And he was like, so excited. He's like, I listened to your podcast. And by the way, I heard that Balance of Nature is one of your new sponsors and we are thrilled to have them. And I'm thrilled to be taking this stuff because I feel pretty good. Shall we say, I'm not the best about my fruits and veggies. So I know I can get them this way with Balance of Nature. 1-800-246-8751, 1-800-246-8751, discount code Trish. You get 35% off if you use that discount code. It's worth it. Look, I feel terrific, and I appreciate all your thank you, guys. Thank you, thank you, thank you. This is a live show, so I can see those comments. Careful what you write. I can see those comments in real time. So Balance of Nature has been great. You can do this too. You can go on their website, check it out. They've been in business for some 20 years. They've got tons, thousands of testimonials touting them, just like my friend, just like me. And people swear by it. I mean, I know I feel great. I feel more clear-headed. And I think it has something to do with making sure I'm getting my right nutrients. It's important. You know, I live in the Northeast. Winter can be kind of gloomy. You Florida people, David, I know you're from Florida. I mean, like, you guys, you get a little vitamin D, but you know what? You can use everything else too. All of this stuff adds up. It helps you overall. So Balance of Nature and discount code Trish. The Princess of Wales is struggling, as you know, with cancer. And her sister-in-law, Meghan Markle, is trying to launch a new business called American, let me see if I can get this right, because these are three like weird words, Riviera Orchard. I think I did. Sometimes I forget them because you can say American Orchard, Riviera, or Riviera Orchard. America. Anyway, America Orchard Rivera. She used to have a blog called The Tig that was really kind of, I guess, a big deal before she met Prince Harry and went over there to the UK and decided to become a crusader for DEI. And she's got him enlisted in the task, etc. And a lot of other minions scattered all around, including at none other than UCal Berkeley, which has a great rowing program. My cousin rowed there, actually, and at Cambridge. And a wonderful rowing program, terrible place to live. I used to live in San Francisco. Berkeley was even worse. So UCal has this guy that runs the DEI, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion program, to make sure that they are being as diverse and equitable and inclusive as they possibly can be at the University of California. And he just started tweeting out a whole bunch of lies. Lies, ladies and gentlemen, trying to suggest that maybe Kate Middleton doesn't actually have what she says she has. I mean, this is crazy. Totally, totally crazy. He's saying that her cancer is fake, and yet he's being paid $126,000 to run this UCLA race and equity program. And clearly, like, there's some deep-seated issues with this guy. And he really hates Kate Middleton to the point where he's actually saying stuff like this. I mean, this is the problem. Look at all those tweets. And he sounds like an angry, messed up guy. He said, "I personally do not believe Kate Middleton has cancer. The royals' presumed cancer, chemo's mere vague mention would squash concerns about Kate's absence. It mostly did." I mean, this guy's nuts. This is the guy running the equity division, diversity, inclusion division, director of that, apparently, according to the Daily Mail report at UCLA. He likes Meghan Markle. He calls her America's princess. I guess she lives on America's Riviera. Oh, my gosh. Like, that's just gross, right? Like, it's really, really gross. And yet, you know, this is somehow all fine. This is the problem we're in right now. It's like, if you're on that side of the aisle, you can get away with saying anything. And yet there's no standards. There's no accountability. There's no accountability for him. There's no accountability to actually do well in school and get A's so that you can actually go on to one of these schools like Harvard, UC Berkeley. They've already run into issues at UC Berkeley, remember? They've already taken that one to the courts. Harvard just got shot down by the Supreme Court this year. And they're looking for workarounds. They're always looking for workarounds because we got to do woke. We got to do all this woke stuff, blah, 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 blah. Well, you know what? Enough, all right? Like, we are a great country. We are a meritocracy. We are the United States of America, where people are doing anything they can to come here every single day since Joe invited them. All right. People want to come here. Why? Because we're a meritocracy where, you know what? It doesn't matter what gender you are, what race you are, your ethnicity, your sexual preference. None of this should matter. What should matter is whether or not you can do the work, whether you're willing to do the work. Fundamentally, that's what counts. All right. And if you want a true America, the beauty of that is that we don't see color, thank you very much, when all they want you to see is that right now. Well, this guy, Charlamagne, is a comedian over on Comedy Central. He gets it. He did like a 3.5 minute long monologue on this, and it was fantastic. I wish I could play the whole thing for you, but I think there's like copyright issues. So I'm just going to play a little snippet. And he nails it. Absolutely, positively nails it. I mean, keep in mind, he just pointed out, for God's sakes, do we really have to watch The Little Mermaid again? And now you want to recast the whole thing so that you're equitable, Disney? Watch Charmaine.
But the biggest failure of DEI is that the number of black people in power at big companies is basically the same as it was 5 years ago. In fact, maybe the only thing that DEI has accomplished is giving racist white people cover to be openly racist.
He said, you know what? You're not going to like what I have to say. And then he went on to say that. And then he showed a bunch of people from Fox. That was like his comic relief. But he hit it, right? I mean, it's like you're openly assuming that somebody can't do something, and then you have to give them a leg up. I'm telling you, that's a recipe for total disaster. Just expect a lot of people. And you know what? You can't fix it at the end, but you can fix it in the beginning. You can fix it in the beginning by having communities with more families, with school choice, by giving parents more say in their kids' education, by opening up the schools and not keeping them closed down forever like they did in the poorest communities in America, right? You go to Baltimore, you go out to Watts in L.A. Those were the schools that were last to open. Chicago, thank you very much. Where Lori Lightfoot was fighting with the teachers union because you couldn't get the schools reopened. That, ladies and gentlemen, that is where you start to have a fundamental breakdown. And it can't be fixed at the college level. And it can't be fixed at the CEO level. It can only be fixed by Americans taking America back from the people that are holding it hostage. It's a big part of why I support everybody at Americans for Prosperity. These are great, great, great folks with great policies. AFP.org. When you can, go check them out because they're all over it, whether it be this insanity surrounding the ESG, DEI stuff, whether it be the inflation that we're continuing to struggle with, whether it be the border, et cetera. Americans for Prosperity, they really want to make sure that, you know what, if President Trump wins, and I think he's going to, come November, unless they do something really, really crazy. And hey, they still could. Nebraska is one issue that we've got to talk about maybe tomorrow. But listen, they still could. But Americans for Prosperity is actively working to make sure that not only he wins, he gets the House and he gets the Senate, ladies and gentlemen, because you got to have the wind at your back, as we like to say. That's my Irish kicking in, right? There's a good Irish blessing about that. Anyway, a lot going on right now. And, you know, this DEI stuff, it's like ensnaring everyone. I mean, consider Disney. Consider what just went down at Disney, everyone. Bob Iger, all proud, popping the champagne corks. Because guess what? Nelson Peltz, I squashed you like a bug. Nelson wanted to actually get rid of some of this woke nonsense at Disney. And so he was trying to get a couple of spots on the board. It became like a full-on brutal campaign. And Disney spent a lot of money. And ultimately, Disney won. And so now, Bob's like doing this victory lap on CNBC this morning. I'm watching it. And he's trying to tell us that the stock is up because of all these great changes he's had. No, 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 buddy. You know why the stock is up? I got to see what it's doing right now. The stock was up because Nelson was in the game. And Nelson was actually the wake-up call that that company needed. So desperately needed. Let's take a look at Disney and let's take a look at Bob trying to say, hey, you know, high five, I did well.
Stock went up. The first time he had a proxy fight, the stock went up. Then it came down when Peltz went away. It went up again during this process. He seems to believe in part that he's helpful in terms of getting you guys to focus. And or there would be those who say, well, an activist is helpful in getting management to focus. And actually it has a good effect on the stock price. How do you react to that argument?
Well, first, let's talk about the stock price. The stock is up over 40% since the beginning of October. There was a slight bump when he announced his interest in basically the second proxy fight. And then actually the stock drifted down after that. And then it went up when we announced our November earnings.
Yeah, I mean,
he then mentioned a slate and named a slate. It drifted up slightly. And then went down again. And then we had our February earnings, which were sensational, and it went up significantly. The market is reacting to how this company is performing. It was not reacting really to the activist fight.
Right.
Sorry, Bob, you're wrong. I know you want to be right, but you're just wrong. Because you know what? The stock's back down. It tanked like 3% and change yesterday, and now it's down 1.5%, $117 a share. It was down in the 80s, actually, before Nelson got involved. And if he's not there, by the way, he already made like $300 million. So I guess it was a win for him. He's trying to make sure that you focus. And yet here you are saying a lot of people don't even really understand woke and blah, blah, blah. He won't really come out and actually deal with the elephant in the room, which is that his programming basically sucks. And he has no actual sort of vision. Other than a whole bunch of sequels, You're not going to survive on sequels. You got to actually move to something else. But I digress. We want to talk about just what exactly what went down, and who better to talk about it with than my very good, very dear friend, my co-founder at 76 Research, none other than Rob Horton, who, by the way, has been on both sides of some of these deals in the past long, storied career on Wall Street. Rob, good to have you here. Thank you.
Hey, Trish, how are you?
So what's your take? What's your take here on Bob's sort of assessment of where his stock is now? What's your take on whether or not Nelson comes back? And also, I guess most importantly, like, how hard are these things for people like Nelson who come in and want to shake it up?
Yeah, you know, I mean, we talked about this. It was a real uphill battle for Nelson to get on the board. It's like kind of like fighting City Hall. That, you know, Iger, you know, the entrenched management, the board, they've got all the corporate machinery working against you. So I kind of actually look at this as like a little bit of a victory for Peltz. You know, he may have lost the battle, but he kind of won the war of ideas, because Disney's been exposed. Their problems have been exposed. He's drawn attention to really the root causes of all their problems. So I think Peltz deserves a lot of credit, you know, from the standpoint of Disney shareholders, but also like all investors, because, you know, Disney's really just a microcosm of all the things that have really gone wrong in corporate America over the last 5 years.
You know, over the last 5 years, it's really kind of taken off. And I think about sort of how this got its start on the ESG front. You and I have talked about it in the past. By the way, the viewers haven't met you before. I talk about you a lot on the show. So everybody, hi to Rob. Rob, the viewers. Anyway, I've spoken about you, and one of the stories I tell is one of the reasons we started 76 Research was actually because you were saying, hey, this is crazy. Like, the ESG requirements are so strict that, you know, even I as a fund manager, I'm struggling to navigate all this, because there's like some rule from somewhere that, you know, you can't invest in such and such because, oh, it's an energy company. And even if you so fundamentally believe in this particular energy company, because of this woke DEI, ESG stuff, everybody has to like solve for those things instead of just, oh, I don't know, making money. And so how far off have we gotten? I mean, we've veered in some weird directions.
Yeah, I see ESG, like, there's two major problems. There's a lot of problems with it. There's two major ones. The first is like the ideas that you're supposed to be promoting. I think you and I disagree with a lot of those ideas, and the hysteria around carbon emissions and equity instead of equality, and, you know, the rejection of merit. But it's really just the idea that these companies should be promoting any agenda or any ideology, as opposed to doing what they should be focused on, which is the shareholder, creating shareholder value, building a strong business, profits for the investors. And, you know, I went to the Trian website last night. You can download the 132-page white paper on Disney. Maybe I'm alone in wanting to do that. But really some strong points made there. They really just took their eye off the ball and stopped focusing on the shareholder and made a series of mistakes. And in fact, the mistakes are even, you know, 70% of the operating profit of Disney now is just that experiences business, their theme parks, the cruises, and the merchandise. And yet earnings over the 5-year period are down 50%.
I think I lost your audio there for a second. Keep going.
No, I was just saying, like, one of the things that they pointed out in the Trian pointed out, the content business and the sports business, the collapse was so severe that that's what led to like a 50% decline in earnings, even though that theme park business has actually done really well, up 40% over the 5 years.
Well, I mean, look, I think that more of this needs to get exposed. I know that the guys over at Strive, that's Vivek Ramaswamy's company, asset management, they're trying to say, hey, you know, we're only going to put our money into companies that really make sense. You think about what BlackRock's done. I mean, Larry Fink's backed away from a lot of it, right? Because, you know, he was out there guns blazing a few years ago saying, hey, we need to do this. This is the right thing for America. It's the right thing for business. And you'll make money doing this. And it's like, really? I mean, like, it kind of sounds like a little bit of a scheme to me. Like, ooh, you know, here's the popular kid. Let's all like put our goggles on and say how beautiful she or he is, when, you know, it's the emperor has no clothes, effectively, right? And so at the end of the day, like, investors, they need to to have some meat on the bones. They need to understand what the company is. They need to know it's going to perform. You think about CalPERS. I mean, this is the retirement fund for California employees. You would think that, oh, California, liberal California, they're going to go with Iger on this one. And no, they were like in Peltz's camp. They're like, we're voting with Peltz because, hey, Disney, wake up.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, I mean, they have to realize they've got a fiduciary duty to shareholders. They're there to deliver for the shareholders and not to enact, you know, political agendas from the EU or the UN or whoever else is really driving, you know, these ESG policies. You know, one
because
of the things, Trish,
that the people need to retire someday.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the whole point of being in business, right? It's not to enact the policies of foreign powers, really. But, you know, one of the things I thought was really interesting that was emphasized in the Trian documents was they really pointed out that Disney has become this culture that stifles dissenting views. And like that's like another aspect of ESG where, you know, everyone's got to stick to the same script and the same talking points. And the people who get promoted are the people who stick to the script. And, you know, when you're in a business like Disney, where it's all about creativity and independent thinking, you know, that's when you start to see the culture decay and the quality of the product decline. And so it's like really these like root, you know, these root problems that Peltz pointed out. So I think, you know, he stuck his neck out and he deserves a lot of credit for calling attention to this. And hopefully others kind of continue to pile on and we start fixing some of these problems.
And recognize that. I totally agree. Listen, well, we're on it every day. I encourage everybody, I say this anyway, but I'll just say it again, you know, go over to 76research.com. You will get a lot of information there from both Rob and myself. You know where we stand on these issues. All we want right now is for Americans to be the best position that they can be for their future. So 76research.com, sign up, get the free stuff, model portfolios there as well. We were talking earlier in the show about income building. We have an income builder portfolio and an inflation protected portfolio, some growth stuff as well. Rob, I'll talk to you later. We talk every day, guys. Rob Horton, thank you so much. My co-founder at 76research.com. All right, moving on to much more. Ukraine, my gosh, Ukraine is going to become part of NATO. That's the big story right now. We just heard from Tony Blinken. He doesn't care what you think. He doesn't care how much it's going to cost, apparently. He's going to make this happen some way, somehow. The Secretary of State saying that on the 75th anniversary of NATO, we're going to make sure Ukraine is part of it. Take a listen.
Support for Ukraine, the determination of every country represented here at NATO remains rock solid. We will do everything that we can. Allies will do everything that they can to ensure that Ukraine has what it needs to continue to deal with Russia's ongoing aggression against Ukraine, an aggression that gets worse with every passing day. Ukraine will become a member of NATO. Our purpose at the summit is to help build a bridge to that membership and to create a clear pathway for Ukraine moving forward.
Of course, we believe that Ukraine deserves to be a member of NATO and that this should happen sooner rather than later.
Okay, he's like, what's taking you guys so long? It's got to happen sooner rather than later. You heard it there from the Ukrainian foreign minister. You know, a lot of Americans are like, I'm not so sure about this. Is this like going to set us up in some kind of really dangerous scenario? You know, Putin has his line drawn in the sand. Apparently we have our line drawn in the sand and there's not a whole lot of diplomacy going down. If there were, you know, we wouldn't be in this situation to begin with. Let me be very, very clear on that. When you think about sort of the avalanche of stupidity going on in Washington, you consider the fact that they had an idea. Let me just say, like, they had an idea. What was one of the first things that Tony Blinken did when he got the job? What was one of the first things that Joe Biden did when he got the job? They started talking about how NATO was so important, so important, so important. Very different kind of tune being sung than the one that we had heard from Donald Trump, which was, hey, NATO, you got to pay your fair share. Didn't you agree to pay 2% of GDP, Germany? Where's your 2%? You're not paying anything. America's the only one paying stuff. So guess what, guys? You better get on board or we're not going to pay anymore. So that was what Trump was saying. Instead, Biden's like, can I give you a check? How much do you want? Okay, done. Well, until he ran into a few problems. Funny thing happened on the way to the forum. We can talk about that. But the reality of the situation is that from a diplomatic standpoint, Putin was hearing exactly what he wanted. Putin. Sorry, that's my New Hampshire accent coming out. It happens with mittens and kittens as well. So sorry, Putin. it's like he was hearing what he needed to hear from Donald Trump. So he wasn't as frightened. But the minute Biden shows up, he talks the way he talks. Tough talking. They send the president of France over there to try and calm Putin down. It didn't work. And the next thing you know, we're in this really significant military scuffle. I say we're technically not in it, but our money's in it. And we have our allegiance and we have promised our allegiance. And so this is where it just gets really messy. And I have my doubts. I don't have this clip. I don't think I have this clip unless Jew's like a magician. But I've played this for you before of John McCain saying 10 years ago, ladies and gentlemen, on the House floor, on the Senate floor, saying that Tony Blinken was not somebody that he could actually vote for Deputy Secretary of State. He couldn't vote for the guy. You know why? Because Tony Blinken would risk American lives. Tony Blinken could cost American lives because Tony Blinken had a vision and he was so hell-bent on whatever vision it was. He wanted to get out of Afghanistan. And this is 10 years ago. McCain was talking about this. 10 years ago, McCain was talking about this, and he had a warning, regardless of what you think about McCain. I know that some of you aren't necessarily president of the fan club, but listen to this. It's actually pretty ominous.
Madam President, I rise to discuss in my opposition to the pending vote concerning Mr. Tony Blinken, who is not only unqualified, but in fact, in my view, one of the worst selections that of a very bad lot that this president has chosen. I hope that many of my colleagues will understand that not often do I come to the floor to oppose a nomination of the President of the United States, because I believe that elections have consequences. In this case, this individual has actually been dangerous to America and to the young men and women who are fighting and serving it. Let's just review some of the elements in particular and Mr. Blinken's role in conceptualizing and furthering it. U.S. foreign policy is in a shambles. It's at best a strategic and at worst anti-strategic. I'll move on to Afghanistan. Blinken said, quote, "We've been very clear. We've been consistent. The war will be concluded by the end of 2014. We have a timetable, and that timetable will not change." This is why I'm so worried about him being in the position that he's in, because if they stick to that timetable, I am telling my colleagues that we will see the replay of Iraq all over again. We must leave a stabilizing force behind of a few thousand troops, or we will see again what we saw in Iraq.
Oh my gosh. It was 10 years ago. 10 years ago, ladies and gentlemen. It's like history just keeps on repeating itself. And we're in a really, really bad spot. A really bad spot with a team that doesn't understand what's at stake, for goodness sakes. You know what? If they understood, if they comprehended, if they had the vision, if they could play chess instead of checkers, they would understand not to provoke Putin at that time. They would have understood that they couldn't just get out of Afghanistan the way they did, because, you know, they're committed to this timetable that they'll blame Donald Trump for. But I'll tell you, Donald Trump would have left a few people behind. Stabilizing forces. So error number one. I mean, I don't think I've ever cried on live TV. I was watching this stuff with you from Afghanistan. Leslie knows. Remember how emotional I was getting? I mean, it was awful, awful. And preventable. That's what was so disgusting about it all. And then we fast forward, we get the mess that we've got there in Ukraine because they don't know how to talk to people, apparently, at our State Department. They don't know how to calm somebody like Putin down. And then you start to wonder, like, is it because they don't want to? Like, is there a business in this? I mean, I hate to be that cynical. I really do. And without getting all, you know, political science on you, sometimes I do that. Go back and watch my shows about George Kennan. We write about that at 76 Research, too. I mean, Kennan, who was the original diplomat to the USSR during the Cold War. I mean, Kennan was like, what are you guys doing with this NATO thing? Why do you keep expanding? You know, you're going to have a real problem. Like, you're going to be right where you were all over again. Unless, of course, the design was to help keep a State Department going that didn't have anything to do after the Cold War was won, right? I mean, they're all sitting around twiddling their thumbs. You look at the stock prices of Lockheed Martin or Northrop Grumman, they've been left for dead, right? And then all of a sudden, what do you know? They start perking up, especially around 2014 when the CIA apparently put its own little mission right in there in Afghanistan. Didn't tell us until a few weeks ago when it all came out in a 22-page report in the New York Times PDF, 22 pages. Yeah, they've had a special op going on. But the deal was, you know what? You can't actually escalate it. They had an op going on. They were trying to measure and determine how truthful Ukraine really would be with us. We didn't entirely trust Ukraine for a variety of reasons. Understandably, I don't know why we trust him now. For goodness sakes, the defense minister keeps siphoning off. Oh, that was the old defense minister, right? And his deputy. They're gone now. We got rid of them. But they were siphoning off all this money. And so, you know, consequently, we've had a history of issues with Ukraine prior to this. We were trying to test them out, figure it out. CIA's been there 10 years. And now look where we are. So when you think about these polls, ladies and gentlemen, when you think about the success that Trump is seeing, it's not just the economy. It's not just the border. It's diplomacy as well. The idea of having some common sense. I mean, common sense would have told you, for goodness sakes, guys, you think you're going to go into some battle with Russia. All of Europe is relying on Russia for natural gas. Nord Stream pipeline, right? 1 and 2. Well, then do you really think it's the best timing to say we're going to cut off all U.S. energy supplies? No more drilling. No more drilling in the USA. We can just all go green and get EVs for 60 grand a pop. I mean, it's like the left hand doesn't talk to the right hand. The stupidity is overwhelming. And so, yes, you need some common sense. You need some common sense, like somebody coming in from the outside and saying, yeah, gee, that doesn't work. That doesn't work. Like Nelson Peltz telling Disney, yeah, this is not working for me. I mean, I like women and everything, but do I really have to see a movie with all women? I'm crazy. Anyway, that's my two cents on things. That's my two cents. I think that this has gotten out of control in ways that it absolutely, positively shouldn't have. Do you agree? I mean, look, we want the best for Ukraine, right? But we're also, I think in this camp, we're realists. And right now, he does not have the political capital to be able to pull this off. Biden, that is. And Antony Blinken. I mean, they just don't have it. They don't got it. You got a messed up house that is full of infighting. You get Republicans, unfortunately, that are leaving. And shame on them. I believe it. When you sign up for a job, you do that job. You don't just, you know, fly the coop as soon as the going gets tough. But that's what so many of them have done. And I often wonder, were they promised this, that, or the other, right? To get out of town quick. You wonder what the other side is offering. They're threatening, oh, you're going to be canceled. There's going to be nothing to you. You know, your career's going to be over. Like Ronna McDaniels. Right? There was a big article the other day in a publication called Mediaite on that, saying like she has no chances, none at all. And I was like, oh, you know, maybe that was also her lawyer's spin because they're trying to really get some money out of NBC, and they should. I mean, she signed a contract. And then NBC threw her under the bus because they get a bunch of weaklings for anchors that are actually apparently pretty powerful and have more say than management. That's when you know the inmates are running the asylum. Hey, good to see you guys. Mike Costa, welcome back, David. David, is Ian here today? I saw your note about the mug. I'm so glad that you like it. Ian was like, I'm a fan. I've been here from the beginning. I even have the mug. So cheers, Ian, to you. Hey, good to see you guys. And we'll continue the conversation. Hopefully, you know, if you have any questions for Rob, you might want to include those in the comments below here. Go for it. See what you can do. And we'll make sure we do our best to get some of those answered. Again, thank you for all your time. Thank you for your support. Go to 76research.com. Go to TrishReganMedia.com. Why do I always forget to tell you that? Go to TrishReganMedia.com as well and make sure you sign up for my list there. And let's keep communicating. Challenging times, but I'm on it. I'm here for you. I mean it. I'll see you tomorrow.